Tell me now about the things that you've run across that are really out there. The ideas that nevertheless have legs and are worthy of investigation.
That's a tough one. I guess because I've been spending so much time on this question, it's the issue of precognition. I'm convinced by the data that we can demonstrate these things in the laboratory pretty well. One of the questions that arises all the time is, what about the causal paradox issue? Most of my friends who are philosophers really don't like precognition at all, and they always raise this issue about the logical incoherence of precognition. That how could you, if you know something in advance, doesn't that change the thing, and wouldn't that change your ability to know about it? And you create this recursive loop that seems like that the universe couldn't possibly enjoy such loops because it's just too confusing.
Well, Douglas Hofstadter proposes in his book, I Am a Strange Loop, comes up with an equally puzzling conclusion, is that perhaps this is totally unknowable.
Well, and there you have it. There's a good problem, isn't it? If you have recursion, and there's plenty of examples of recursion out there in the world, if you also have recursion in time, then we have a pickle. So that's something I worry about, because it appears as though in our experiments and other people's experiments that we're seeing effects that flow backwards in time. And yet, if that's an unresolvable paradox, then will we end up gathering better and better evidence that such things exist and yet we can't understand it? I don't think I like that idea, although maybe that is the case.
Can you take me back in time to the work of Benjamin Libet, a fellow at the University of California? I think he was at UC Berkeley, was he not?
He was in the vicinity, yes. I don't remember whether it was Berkeley or maybe San Francisco.
What was the significance of his work and research, especially given what you just said a few moments ago?
Well, Libet's work can be interpreted in two ways. From a standard neuroscience point of view, it was one of the reasons why neuroscientists began to accept that we're zombies, that consciousness is an illusion, and that basically we're just machines, fancy machines, but nevertheless machines. The other interpretation is more in alignment with the kind of work that I've been doing, which is actually looking at precognition, cognition of something which is about to occur in the future. So there's two very dramatically different interpretations of Libet's work. His experiment, or one of his experiments, the main one, involved having people decide whenever they wanted to move a finger, and while watching a clock to indicate when they initially had the intention of moving their finger, and then the report where the clock was when they felt that intention, and then go ahead and move the finger. So there isn't much time between your intention and the movement. But nevertheless, he found in repeated tests that the brain was already going into showing signals that were associated with movement before the person got the conscious intention that they were about to do the movement. So from this, there's where the two interpretations come about. In one case, you can say, well, this means that the brain unconsciously knew what you're about to know. Your sense that you know something is kind of an illusion. The brain had already made up its mind, and then it rose to conscious awareness, and now you have the sense, oh, I just decided to do something, but that's an illusion too, because your brain had already decided it. And this is why the notion arises in the neurosciences that all of our conscious experience, our decisions, everything to do with our conscious awareness is already determined by the brain, which is generating stuff, and some of that stuff rises to our awareness. The flip side is that when you're thinking there, I think I'm going to move my finger now, that intention travels backwards in time. And so what we see then is the brain beginning to show readiness waves, which are anticipation of movement. Those readiness waves are occurring because in the future you have the intention. So do you get it? You get the difference between these two?
Yes, I understand the work, but I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone understands it. I think what we're doing, which happens oftentimes at the frontiers of science, we're beginning to learn how to ask better questions because the nature of the problem is beginning to resolve itself. Resolve not in the sense that we now figured it out, but resolving in the sense that when you you focus on an image with a camera, that you can bring it into better resolution. So I think this kind of issue about is the brain simply anticipating something that's going to happen, or is it reacting to something in the future? This is a focused resolution of a problem, so we're able to ask better questions. And the moment we can ask better questions, we can design better experiments to address it and figure out what actually is going on.
With the understanding that there are so many questions and only so many breaths one has in a lifetime, what do you think has a reasonable chance of being resolved before you put your head into the cloud?
I'm less interested in resolving questions than in exploring them, because my own bias is that I think we know enough now about the nature of our psychological filters so that we know that we're not actually seeing reality as it is. We're seeing our interpretation of it and our projection of it, and we all have prejudices and biases and so on. And so it's not clear to me that we can get ultimate resolution on anything. And part of this actually is also based on history, that you look back at people like William James, who was probably a century ahead of his time, and he studied psychic phenomena, as I am. And when he started his career, he thought that they would find some resolution. And then 25 years later, he wrote something which has been echoed through the centuries by other people. And to put as a rough paraphrase, after 25 years of studying these phenomena, I'm convinced that they're real, but I'm also completely baffled as to the nature of them. And so I've seen the same kind of comment said again and again and again by people who are a lot smarter than me. And so I think it would be foolish for me to imagine that there's going to be some kind of resolution of any sort. And so rather than hooking my wagon to that, I'm hooking it more to the idea that there are some questions which are so important and so interesting that we need to loosen up the taboo to allow people to study it. And I think that is something that actually has a chance of being resolved. And I think it's being resolved. Precognition 25, 30 years ago was considered laughable by basically everyone in the academic world, because no one had any idea how such a thing could exist. Well, today we have symposia on quantum retrocausation, because we know that it does exist at the quantum level. There's still a major mystery on how you scale up from the quantum to everyday experience, but in a sense that becomes a quibble as compared to before, where it was impossible. So the advancement of science is making it possible for some topics to be studied in an open way using the engine of big science, which is very powerful. And that engine has never been applied to not only to consciousness, which is fairly recent, but to aspects of consciousness that make it really, really interesting topic. So I'm hoping that I'll live to see a change in the attitudes among the academic world that will allow people to study this without putting their career at risk.